Okay. Hello, hello, and welcome to the show. If you're listening, you probably already know that I'm not alone this week, which is so exciting because I know that sometimes y'all don't want to just listen to me rant and ramble about the various things going on. And this is very exciting for me because this is my first type of this podcast. Today, I am interviewing the amazing Dr. Adara Landry and Dr. Risa Lewis, who are, in addition to the many things and many titles they hold, they are also the authors of a forthcoming book, which might be out by the time that you listen to this podcast episode, called Micro Skills, Small Actions, Big Impact, which is what we're going to be talking about today. But first, I would love for them to introduce themselves. So please go ahead, Adara.
Well, first, thank you so much for the invitation. I'm just really excited to be here chatting with you. So I am Dr. Adara Landry. I'm an emergency medicine physician at the Brigham. I've been here for about 8 years now. I focused most of my career on career development and mentorship of early career professionals. So mostly medical students and residents, but a little bit of fellows too. And I love to just help people navigate their own ambitions. And that's just largely inspired by my own personal struggles with navigating my own ambitions. When I'm not doing that, I see patients clinically. And then when I'm not seeing patients, I have a nonprofit that I've co-founded, really focused on teaching people of color how to write and just trying to level that playing field. And when I'm not doing that, I have three kids. I have a 2-year-old, 5-year-old, and a almost 7-year-old.
Amazing. Welcome to the podcast. It's so funny. People can list off all their accomplishments and I'm like, that sounds good. That sounds good. And once they tell me they have more than 2 kids, which is how many kids I have, I'm like, oh my God, how do you do it?
2 is the threshold.
2 is the threshold. Once you go above 2, I'm like, you are superhuman.
2 and but I will say 4 is a whole different level. Like it just, it's like exponential after
that. I have a friend with 4 children and like, I love her to death, but I tell her all the time, like how, I don't know. I don't know about this. I don't know about these choices. Anyway,
we're done. I can tell you that we're done.
Welcome, Adara. Risa, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. My name is Risa Lewis, Dr. Risa E. Lewis. I like putting the middle initial in there. And I'm a professor of emergency medicine, currently with an academic appointment at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. I am a podcast host and creator, similar to you, Dr. Dole. The name of the podcast is The Visible Voices, and you have been so gracious as to be one of my guests. Within emergency medicine, my professional journey has been focused a lot on the use of ultrasound at the bedside. So I have written and spoken and led and traveled the world as a medical educator with the topic focus being point-of-care ultrasound. Around the time of COVID, I started moving towards the podcast space and more of the storytelling, creative expression space, speaking and writing. And Adara and I started writing more outside of the traditional walls of medicine for mainstream outlets such as Fast Company and Harvard Business Review and others, because we noted that some of our challenges navigating the workplace, they weren't just an us thing, they weren't just a medicine thing, they were an everywhere, every industry thing. And so it really, this book that we're focusing on today is sort of a culmination of those thoughts, those efforts, those life experiences, and we're so glad to be able to talk with you about it today.
Thank you. Welcome to both of you. I feel like both of you just embodied one of your micro skills in the book, which is becoming comfortable talking about yourself, which is one of the ones that I like asterisks as like, oh, this is one of my favorites, under actively find new opportunities. So there you go. Okay. So my first question is just to start off with like, who is this book for? Because Risa, you just mentioned you started, both of you started writing and you started realizing this is not a medicine thing. This is not an us thing. So talk to us about who do you want to pick up, who you wrote this book for, I should say.
Well, we intended to write a book that was not just for doctors, not just for women. We really wanted to exit that space and really have a wide range of readers. And I think our initial thought was this was going to resonate really for early career professionals, people who are just entering the workplace, you know, coming out of college, coming out of graduate school, haven't really had a job and need to learn how to navigate the system. And we've also have received a lot of positive feedback from people who have been in the workplace for decades. It's a refresher for them. It's validating for them. It's also a guide for them to help mentor people who are younger than them. And so even though our intention was to reach that early career space, we've been positively surprised with just how wide of a pool we're reaching.
You know, it's so funny that you said that, because as I was reading it, I was thinking, this is a great mentorship tool. I could see somebody taking this book and being like, you know what, you are doing really well in like this area and this area, but I want you to focus on the chapter in this book about time management, or focus on this, because it can download quite a lot of information to that person. And in some ways, maybe in a more accessible manner than what a mentor has the capability of being able to provide from a communication standpoint, or is even comfortable being able to speak about. So it's funny that you said that, because I had the exact same thought about how it's such a good tool, kind of regardless of where you are. So I have a question. You start out, one of the things you start out the book with, which I loved, was three truths. I was like, oh, these are my people. I love this already. And so the three truths that you highlight are: time can only be spent, the world is not equal, and learning is limitless if it is accessible. So my question is, why was it important to you all to start with these three? And particularly, can you tell me more about what you mean by learning is limitless if it's accessible?
I'll start. You know, the way we structured the book evolved over time. And there's certain things we felt strongly about, i.e., everything starts with the self. And the more you can make sure you're in a good place, then you're ready to help take care of the team. And then together, you can all address the work. And that, you know, but this sort of everything starts with the self. But backing up, you know, when we were looking at other books in this space, the business self-help space, and we were looking at other authors, and we were also explaining to people why we thought our book was different. There's so many assumptions made when you look at books in this space, and authors often make the assumption that the reader has access to resources, to knowledge, to generational acquisitions, to fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. And we tried to the best of our ability to not make those assumptions, to make this book accessible to everybody and to tell them the how, because a lot of books will tell you to go out and do something, learn something, acquire something, but it's not the how. It's not breaking it down into those critical actions, which are definitely a reflection of our experience in medicine, of like having to describe critical actions when we're taking our oral board examinations as emergency physicians, but I digress. The accessibility part, you know, I'll go back to emergency medicine and ultrasound. Everywhere I've been, every place I've taught, like every person I've met, every patient I've taken care of, every colleague I've worked beside, we all want the same things. We want food, shelter, clothing, and education. Like everybody wants it. The question is, do you have access to it? We're talking books, we're talking the internet, we're talking, you know, people as resources. And so we think that many authors, many books don't quite get it, that everybody can't just go out and acquire or buy or all the things that just are assumed. So we wanted to call that out and say that we realize not everybody starts at the same starting line, and that accessibility and that creating accessibility, the reader, the listener, or the audience, they need to figure out how to create that accessibility for themselves, because the work and their workplace may not create that accessibility for them.
Yeah, I think, I agree about all of the self-help books, like the business books, I should say, like in the lead, like it's almost like you have to figure out what the privilege and perspective of the author is, so then you can figure out whether or not they're speaking to you. And it micro skills just makes it very clear. Also, just by the way that you all have chosen to structure it, which I found it to be very accessible. One, in that it's very consistent with how the structure goes, with the narrative, within, I can't remember each name of each of the sections, I apologize, but like you have the narrative, and then you have the idea, then you have the bullet points, and then you have the action. Like it's very easy to open to any page and know where you are. You don't have to go back 20 pages to understand the context. It's right there on the page. In that way, it kind of reminded me of Set Boundaries, Find Peace. because everybody knows who listens to podcasts, I'm obsessed with that book. I love that book so much. But one of the things that I think is very radical about that book is the tone and the way it's written is deeply accessible. It's simple, short sentences, no, like not large vocabulary that nobody knows what anybody's talking about. And so really it's the same, has the same feeling to it. Like anytime you open it, you're going to find it. The other thing about Set Boundaries, Found Peace is that as I read it, because it's a book about boundaries, it's like you read it and you know, like depending on what position you are, you're going to get something very different out of this. Like I'm reading it in a certain way and thinking, okay, I'm going to deal with this person and this thing in a different way. But the thing is that person can also be reading it and think, oh, this is how I'm going to deal with Kemi, like, because she's driving me crazy. And so I started, as I was reading this book, I just started thinking about, because it's so accessible and because you've done something very hard, which is break down these concepts into very clear and succinct ways, it almost can be like an open canvas in terms of how people interact with it. So basically my question is coming to this, and it comes back to the privilege, right? Is that recognizing one of the skills you have as a micro skill is recognizing your privilege. And I thought to myself, that's important for some people picking up this book. And what I wondered is, do you think there's a micro skill in dealing with people with unrecognized privilege? And like, what does that look like? Is that part of this? Is that part of like a combination of your skills? I'm just curious your thoughts about that.
That's a great question. Thank you for all of your thoughts. You know, we put it in the book that we have privilege. I mean, as a physician, like, we have privilege through our education, through our network, through our salary, mm-hmm. through the fact that we don't have to work every single day. Like we can take time off depending on, you know, obviously your specialty is a little bit specialty dependent. But so I would assume that someone reading this book, able to buy this book, interested in their career development, would be interested in knowing like how much privilege do I have and mm-hmm. if any at all. I do think that what you're saying is a great point. And we probably don't call it out specifically, which is like, how do you recognize that you are denying the privilege that you have? Because I think that's an issue in the workplace as well. People are like, I'm not privileged, or there's nothing special about me. I wouldn't say that we take that exact angle. I think it's more of just understanding that depending on your network, your finances, your pedigree, your bank account, and we call it out that way, it hopefully makes people pause and do an audit of themselves. And just recognize like, oh, wow, I actually do have a lot of things that mm-hmm. have made life easier for myself. And some mm-hmm. of these things I have worked hard for, right? Like I've worked really hard to become a doctor. It is a privilege, but it wasn't handed to me. And there are some things that people are just afforded by the fact that they were born with certain last names or generational wealth tied to them. Right. And so I think there's a balance here of, yes, some privilege comes with hard work and some of it is handed to you.
Yeah. Risa, do you have anything to add?
You know, when we were writing this, sometimes we're like, well, are we writing this as sort of the teacher's mentors? Are we writing this as you're the leader leading the team? Like we sort of, mm-hmm. I didn't distinguish that. So when we were writing this, we were wondering, who is this for? Like you started out by asking us about the audience. Like, is this someone who's really, really early career and needs to be taught these things? Or are we speaking to people leading teams who are actually mid-career, maybe late career, or just have expertise mm-hmm. already? And so I think to Adara's point, we don't call that out as a micro skill the way you just asked. And it is a really, really insightful question. However, our goal is to help the people without privilege be like, okay, I feel seen. Yeah, I feel seen. I'm in a workplace and thank you for seeing me. But flip it, the people that have the privilege, like I remember I asked you, Kemi, on our podcast conversation, like, don't you think, is there an element of everybody in medicine's traumatized? You're like, yes. No, it's just the people you and I know. I was like, exactly. Oh. And so, you know, we could say the three of us, well, everybody we know is aware enough, has read the articles yeah. and knows that they should keep their privilege in check. But no, there no. is a large part of the reader, listener, audience community that actually probably doesn't think about these things. And so it's both and. Number one is to help those that don't have mainstream, traditional, fill-in-the-blank majority group privilege to feel seen and that this book can speak to them. And also flip it, if you are part of that majority or you are the recipient and have been able to walk through the professional workplace life with privilege, then maybe you can start to take a minute and do, I love that word that Adara uses a lot, audit, and see where that plays a role and see how you can then translate that, because we speak a lot in the book, micro skills for being a team player, upstanding, you know, things like this. So there's ways to, like, it's not just like stop and like make your list of all the ways you're privileged, but also like why and how can that actually help you in the workplace, but also help you help your team in the workplace.
Yeah, I both of your comments to this really resonate with me, which is that, first of all, I think privilege is one of those things that, like, no matter which way you direct it, it creates awareness in the room. And so it's something that, like, so in that sense, I do think it's like addressed in the book. But the other thought I had after I got to the end was like, this is kind of a handbook for if you don't have privilege too, because so many of the micro skills to me, like, you know, the learning the expectations of your supervisors, you know, like how do you compose an email based on what you're trying to get from the person versus not. Like, you have, there's several examples where you kind of show like, this is the brief version, this is the long version. To me, all of those are components that, like, you either maybe got from osmosis because of the kind of environment you grew up in and you were around, or you really don't know. And so, like, in a way, I think that this book can bridge the gap for people who might not have been born into privilege, who have not, might not, for example, like, you don't have, like, everybody in your family is not a doctor. Nobody's ever been in academic medicine. They have no idea how this world works. Like, I know this is not just for doctors, but this sense of like, how do you figure out a new environment? Like, what are the intangibles that you're supposed to be figuring out in the environment that nobody is saying? I got the sense that somebody going through this book and like applying these micro skills would basically be doing that. They'd be figuring that out, which is a major improvement from where a lot of people end up, which is basically like, I know I don't fit here and I know there are unspoken rules, but I don't know what they are and I don't know how to access them. And that's like something I got out of the pages that I really appreciated as well.
I think one of the hardest parts, thank you for that comment. I think one of the hardest parts for us was cutting content, because there were a lot of topics we really wanted to cover that we just didn't have room for, because there were, you know, a certain number of words you can use for this genre of books. And I think we expect this book to be a starting point for people just to recognize the power of you know, building your go-to people. And the power of being patient and not being so impulsive and knowing that you have time to think and do research and reflect. Mm-hmm. And by doing those two things, right, like using your go-to people and taking time, you have now this like gap or bridge so that if there's a skill we didn't cover, you now understand, like, let me go investigate the ways I can address this skill that's not really in the book, but I would like to learn.
Yeah, that makes, I love it. I agree fully. One of my favorite ones was, well, I will get into that in a second. I feel like I'm jumping ahead of myself. Stay on task, Kemi. Okay. So, so what do you think about the idea that another word for this, another title for this book is how to be a good person? Because as I was reading it, I was just like, these are all ways to be like a reasonable, like, positive, collegiate, like, presence in an environment to be able to do your work well, to be able to ultimately, like, ultimately have like a net positive impact on people around you while taking care of yourself. And so I was just curious, like, how that lands with both of you about that title, and if you think it's like off or not.
I will start and say that question made me smile broadly, deeply. And if that's what someone takes from this book, then, like, I'm okay. That's A-okay. Yeah. So to be clear, you know, we are not perfect and we are all works in progress. And we are first to say that we don't get everything right. We are not perfect. The goal is not to do a top-down, this is the way one should do things because we do things perfectly and we have we have championed the workplace. And so I think these are all goals. These are all ideals. And, you know, as you navigate the professional journey, you get better at a lot of them and maybe you get tops at almost all of them, but you're never perfect and you haven't gotten to where you want to get for every single one of them all the time, every day, for every circumstance. So goals.
Yeah. It's like lifelong learning.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think we wrote this book from a place where we wanted to be very vulnerable. I mean, we had a lot of stories.
There are a lot of stories in here, y'all. You're going to read and be like, oh my Lord, this happened to me too. I mean, I loved it. I was like, oh, it's a new section. I get another story. Go ahead.
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I wasn't sure. There's a delay on my end. So I just wanted to make sure. Okay. We were writing this book. When we were writing this book, we wanted to make it as authentic and vulnerable as we could and keep it engaging. Mm-hmm. We didn't really want to write it from a place of higher ground where we're just talking about how easy everything has been and how we have succeeded because that wouldn't be true. And so we hope that by sharing our own observations, mistakes, errors, experiences, all of that, that we just show people that success is hard. You know, I think if I had to rename the book, I think it would probably be Success is Hard. And it's also a very personal definition. Like how we define it is also very individualistic. Mm-hmm. You know, I hadn't really thought about trying to make the reader a better person because I don't necessarily think people are bad. I think it's
you're
just
better than me,
don't know how to navigate the workplace.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think this is good. And this actually leads me to my next question. I'm sorry I spoke over you, but what I said is that you're better than me because I'm still working. I'm still elevating myself into a place where I can see that everybody has inherent goodness. Like, you know, I'm still being worked on in that way. But what I wanted to offer is that, do you all share that perspective or is that, or do you feel like you're maybe in different perspectives on certain things? And what perspectives might have differed between the two of you that helped you write this book together? Essentially, why did you write this book together?
Well, I think just from a mechanical standpoint, it's really nice to have someone to brainstorm with and iterate with and type and edit with. Like all of those things are great with someone else. In regards to why I think our duo is a strong duo, I think we have very different backgrounds and upbringings and family structure and experiences as far as where we went to school. I went to school on the West Coast. Risa went to school on the East Coast. And we also have very different personal lives. And because of that, we see the workplace and we interact with the workplace very differently. And so I think that collective perspective is a really great strength to add to writing a book because it's not just coming from my perspective, you know, as a working mom. I think if I were writing it alone, I would probably have overly emphasized that struggle. But it's nice because we have a new perspective and we can sort of understand that not everyone who's working and having a hard time working is a working mom or a Black woman. And so I think like just opening that up really actually helps allow us to relate to the audience, a wider audience.
Risa, what did you learn from Adara by writing this book with her?
It's a great question. You know, it has been an amazing experience writing a book, as Adara said, with another person, but it's not just a person, but specifically with Adara. You know, we had a proof of concept before we started this book. We had a good track record of writing papers and writing papers together and really having a cadence that worked. And so when it came to writing the book, I think, you know, a paper is not as much of a deep dive as taking on a project like writing a book. So it's been really fun, really, like I had much more fun writing this book than I would have expected. And I want to say that writing it with someone helps you move things along. I think otherwise there's a lot of punting and procrastination that could have occurred, but you are now held accountable, not just to yourself, but to another person. And what did I learn about Adara? I did learn, you know, number one, and I've said this before, like when we came to this book, we have certain experiences that are obviously overlapping, this Venn diagram of overlap that I speak a lot about. But I think the storytelling helped see how we've had different experiences, but maybe the same lessons from the workplace. And maybe because like I'm 15 years older, or I'm white, or I'm this like Northeasterner, or fill in the blank. And so the experiences, some are overlapping, some are the same, some are different. But I'm a big believer at the end of the day that people are people. And it's been sometimes really just sad, the stories that we've shared or that we've talked about in like fleshing them out to sort of illustrate the micro skills, but that Adara has had different stories that got her to some of the same exact lessons and a feeling that this micro skill is really, really important.
Yeah. Adara, did you want to add anything to that?
Writing a book, I keep describing it as a marriage because it really does feel like that. I mean, it's a lot of time you spend with one person. You know, this book took 3 years. I don't think I had no idea how long it took to write a book because I hadn't done it. I'm a debut author. Reese is a debut author.
Mm-hmm. Congratulations.
You, write your book, you will be a debut.
I know. It's a promise.
I can't wait to read it. And so when you write a book for the first time, you might not have a good understanding of just how challenging it is. I mean, it's hard. It's hard with a partner. I would imagine it'd be harder without a partner, especially if you don't know anything. I mean, everything's like the first time we're doing it, right? When it comes to like finding a literary agent, that
everything
was the first
new.
Time we did
yes.
it. Mm-hmm. Finding a publicist, that was the first time we did it. So it's just like, you're sort of going off of your own intuition. I have my intuition. Risa has her intuition. And I would say the vast majority of the time they overlap, but sometimes they're different. Mm-hmm. And so like navigating those differences is an area of growth that we both are going through, you know, and like, that's a reality of writing a book, is that it's a big project. And the fun thing about it is that, you know, we're able to get so much positive support. And I think that it's just great that like, yes, it's a stressful situation. And also we're getting a lot of positive feedback. And that really keeps us going, because I feel like it'd be a very different experience if we were getting no feedback, if we did not have a big publishing house behind us, if podcasters did not want us on their show, right? So, like, that helps keep that momentum going.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel that fully. So there are very many micro skills in here. I don't know if y'all know exactly how many there are. I did not count them up, but I'm like scrolling and scrolling through my notes and there are so many. So one question I have for you is, what is your favorite micro skill?
We get this question and it's a hard question, Dr. Dole, because it changes. It changes day by day. You know, is it sunny out?
Right.
You know, is there precipitation out? And I think often for me, the one is that's my favorite is the one that I recently referred to or utilized actively. And so I can just name a fave, or I can sort of
name a fave. Name your current right now fave. We want to know what's active for you right now, Risa.
So my current active fave is the micro skill of networking. And the whole chapter, we have a whole chapter, listeners, readers, audience members, micro skills for networking. And one of the reasons why I really like this micro skill is so many people think they don't have a network. And we teach and speak about how nobody is starting from network zero. And networking can actually have a connotation of yuck and just stress and work. And a lot of people are like, ugh. But we actually have a specific microskill on networking for introverts. And I personally like this one, and I resonate because I am deeply an introvert. And, you know, all throughout my professional journey in academic medicine, you know, going to the big dinner at the big annual meeting or, you know, staying late at the party of many, many, many people where I wasn't having any real deep conversations, but lots and lots and lots of superficial conversation, like all the things that make those extroverted events not right for the introvert, I felt seen when I started reading more. And also specifically, there is a book on networking for introverts. So for people that are interested, you know, certain ways to network and grow your network without feeling like you're compromising all of your inner fibers, you know, you can do things like have one-on-one meetings as opposed to going to the big group party, as an example, you know, to sort of conserve your energy or being able to rest rather than staying at the conference hotel. If we're talking about attending a professional conference, stay at one nearby, but not in the same, you know, wherever the conference is. You're shaking your head a lot. Does that mean you resonate?
Oh, 100%. I have a podcast episode that's literally basically like how to survive conferences. That is like, it's all about like, how do you bob and weave and duck and avoid people, but still make the connections you need to make, but like not come home exhausted. So I just was getting excited. But yeah, the section you're talking about is in the book is called Grow Your Network. It was definitely one of my favorites. I loved how you started off with like just discovering what are your networking needs? Like, what do you even need? And then my favorite in that whole section was understand the difference between conversation and commitment. Oh my God. Underline. Amen. 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 Like I wanted to shout that one from the rooftops because I think that's where like most networking goes wrong for people who don't know what they're doing. And it just makes the whole environment, like it just makes the whole interaction difficult for people if they're not clear on those, on that distinction. So I loved like pulling that out, and I had never heard anybody put it in the language that you all did. So I love the networking piece. And the other reason why I love it so much, it kind of speaks to what you were saying, Risa, when you were like, it can have this like slimy connotation. I think it has a slimy connotation because of the picture of networking we've been shown and because of the authors and the way that it's generally talked about, which is a lot of schmoozing and go to the party and have an extra drink and stay late and chit chat with this person about their golf game and like all of these things. And it's like I'm going to refer back to our podcast because it's kind of the Amelia Bedelia moment to me, because it's like, if you take that in, then it's makes sense that you would feel like, I don't want a network that feels gross. It feels inauthentic. I don't want to talk to people about stuff that I don't care about in their lives just to like be friends with them or whatever. And the thing is that not only do you not have to do it that way, it's probably not going to work for you. So you might as well use the micro skills in this book on growing your network that is much more, to me, authentic. It's much more goal-directed. It's clear. It's logical. And you can let go of the image of trying to be like the smooth person walking around the party that knows everybody. So that was actually one of my favorite sections. So it's funny that you bring it up. Okay, Adara, your turn. What's your favorite micro skill?
Yeah, like Risa, it really depends on the day.
Today.
And just like what's going on. I will do a mini one and then a real one. I will say that one of the ones that I just saw recently on LinkedIn was, it looked like it was a picture of a team at a, maybe it was a strip club. I'm not quite sure what environment they were in. It was an all male team and they were in a nightclub setting and posted it on LinkedIn. And it just reminded me of the micro skills we have, which is socialize carefully at work.
Yes.
A lot of people think that just because they're your buddies doesn't mean work policy doesn't apply. And so I just wanted to quickly mention that because I just saw that a couple of days and I was like, I'm not so sure. But otherwise, always it's going to be one of my, I guess, work in progress micro skills is setting limits on the number of meetings that I'm having.
Yes.
So I don't mind meetings if the meeting is a great brainstorm, there are great action items, it's a wonderful, fruitful conversation like this, right? This is effectively like a meeting. Mm-hmm. But you can only have so many a day. And so I'm becoming much better about setting boundaries on how many I'm willing to have in a day, because otherwise my entire day is washed out and none of the action items I have for personal errands, professional errands, familial errands, any of those sorts of things are going to get done. So I've been pretty good about like blocking the amount of hours that I will put into my job as an advisor for the medical school. So yep. I will only do about 2 hours max. There's a lot of meetings with that position. Mm-hmm. So I cap it at like 2 hours a day. And I used to sometimes do it all in 1 or 2 days, and that would be like 10 hours of meetings. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm much better about just protecting those times. I also don't like to have meetings before 9. It's just way mm-hmm. too stressful. I have my kids, I'm dropping them off at daycare, I'm getting their yep. lunch ready. It's just impossible. And similarly, I don't really like to have meetings from 6 to 9 p.m. because that's when my kids are home and we're doing dinner time and bath time. So that's just something, you know, every day I'm like just reminding myself, like, give yourself time, make space for family, and deprioritize work. Like, I'm always trying to like balance those things.
Yeah. And I think the structure was what helps us balance. Like one of the things I talk about a lot, like in the coaching world, is like, stop trying to use your willpower and your desires to drive your decisions every day. Create structure that makes the decision for you. And I feel like that's what you're saying is like, if you create a structure where parameters, yeah, you only have 2 hours of meetings a day. You never can schedule a meeting after 6 p.m., which is all of you stop doing that. But like, you can never do that. Then it's like, now you don't have to make that decision that day. You don't have to do, it's just, it's already done. And so I love that one too. I'll say a couple of ones that I really liked. I just had my notes and I lost my notes. Sorry. It's going to come back to me. Okay. Here we go. Respect due dates. This is then build and maintain your reputation. We don't have time to go into all the things I feel about this section, which are a lot of good things, but respect due dates. I loved, because I'm like, the more people we can get to read and follow the build and maintain your reputation section of this book, the more we will disrupt academic culture. And we will attempt to create a culture where words mean things and where due dates matter. And so people can improve on planning their lives in a realistic way, because everybody is actually taking true stock of what they have going on, what they're able to do, and going from there, as opposed to, I think what happens now, which is like, we just give up that it's possible. And so it leaves every individual trying to like scramble to understand how they can like wrangle their time and their energy appropriately. So I really love that. I also really loved build recognition, but keep your local reputation. I loved that. I think for me personally, as somebody whose like visibility and identity and roles have shifted so drastically over the past 6 to 8 years, it is, I guess what I say is like, I can see how it's very easy to lose connection, like lose your local connections, lose your local networks in the noise of it all. But those are the only connections that matter, actually, at the end of the day. It's like when everything's quiet, when people turn off their phones, when they turn off, you know, all that is gone. It's only those connections that remind you of like who you are, what matters to you, and the place where you can make real impact and change like directly with people. So I love that one. I starred that one. I thought that was a beautiful thing to put into reputation. And then I had one more, which was becoming comfortable talking about yourself. And I liked this one because I loved how you all emphasize this idea of like all yourselves. So like what I wrote was, I really like how this is integrated rather than disparate. And you did the same thing when you did your introductions at the top of this podcast episode. It's like, I don't have to just be one thing in one arena. I can be all things. And the way that from my perspective and where my interest lies, which as you know, is academic medicine, public health, like the more that we can allow people to be multi-hyphenate and bring all of their different selves to work and like not have to have this like weird split identity, the better and more healthy our workplaces will be in addition. So those are just a few. There are more, y'all. Literally, there are so many different skills in this book. It is an amazing, I think it's an amazing read because it has all the stories in it. So you got to go read the juicy stories. There are also emergency physicians. So all the stories are like, they're like high stakes in some way, shape or form. Adara, your story about the elevator and being on the, when you were resident, I had to like close the book. I had to take a deep breath because I was triggered. Honestly, I was triggered by all of the other moments that I had experienced the same thing. And again, in another conversation, we can talk about like just all of that, like all that surrounds those kinds of unspoken hierarchical habits, right? That just keep people in their place. That's the only goal of them. But anyway, y'all, there's things about becoming a subject matter expert. There are things about being able to move out of like your given profession into something else. How do you figure out what your talents are? In addition to sleep and gratitude and like all these other things. So what I want to say to you too is, as we wrap up, is I deeply respect a big swing. There's nothing that I respect and love more than people who are like, you know what, this is a big undertaking and we're just going to go for it. And I know, Adara, you were saying like one of the hardest things was like, what do we leave out? Like, what do we cut? And I heard a lot of you saying like, we're not trying to be experts. Like, we're not perfect. And like, yes, all those things are true, y'all, but they did it. They actually set out to write a really functional, useful book of skills that people can use to improve their work experience every day. And they did it. And that is worthy of celebration. So thank you for your effort, your multi-year journey, your multi-year effort. And thank you for gracing our podcast and all podcast listeners. We will drop the link to order this book in the show notes for this episode because you should all go check it out. If you feel like you don't need it, then buy it for somebody that you think might need it. Thank you all so much. And I really appreciate your time on the show.
Thank you, Kemi.
Thank you so much. That was amazing.